Today is Thursday. It is the 2nd of November 2017. My, how the time flies. It is 11:12 in the morning. I'm John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio. We appreciate you tuning in, and if you think this is swell, and we do, then make sure you hear my show weekdays from 1 to 3, Monday through Friday, that is, on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Wintrust Business Lunch, right before John's show, Monday through Friday at noon.
I'm Krista McQuarrie with the Chicago Tribune Editorial Board.
Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the Prickly City Podcast, right here on WGN+.
I'm Eric Zorn, the pure and blameless columnist for the Tribune. I write Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Dude, okay, fine. I'm just going to say this at the start. But I thought that what you put out there about Sarah Sanders looking like Fester from the Addams Family was inappropriate.
Uncle Fester, be respectful.
Yeah. Who are you speaking of?
This was a Facebook post.
Oh, yeah, pardon me. And that was directed at Eric Zorn.
And this was a thing was going on Facebook, and it was a picture of Uncle Fester and a picture of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and they had the same facial expression.
Yeah.
Did you have the same reaction, John, down the page where there was Grandpa, and it looked like Ted Cruz?
I thought that was hilarious.
Well, and what's the point?
And the one where Eddie Munster looked like, my wife calls Paul Ryan Eddie Munster because they have a similar appearance.
Yeah, the same Widow's Peak, same hairstyle.
Right, and I think that's funny, and I have no problem with that. Why do I feel different about Sarah Sanders? I don't know.
Yeah, you do, because she's a woman.
Okay.
Yes,
I guess
we're going to have this discussion, right, about all these sexual harassment claims that are coming out of Springfield and women constantly having to be judged on how they look. And I will just say I don't like when people post stuff like that. You can disagree with her on policy positions. I felt the same way about Hillary Clinton when people would call her, you know, make fun of her cankles or the way she looked or refer to her clothing or Janet Reno or any of them. It's wrong. And you can't be on one side protector of women and then on the other side be constantly mocking them because of how they look.
What bothers me about it is I think that in Eric's case, he can win all of the arguments. I mean, he's good in print. He's good in verbally, too. Eric can win the arguments without having to resort to mocking her appearance.
If I may stand in defense of my good friend Eric Zorn, I kind of disagree. I agree if you're making fun of a woman's appearance in general, if you're making fun of her weight or calling her ugly or something like that. But also, if we are going to live in a society where we are equal and you can caricature a man like Speaker Ryan and call him Eddie Munster with no repercussions at all, I think if we're going to, I think we have to, there has to be a safe zone where women in the news also can be caricatured the same way.
Well, let me jump in and say, as an editorial cartoonist, I make fun of everybody. And, I mean, if you take away, 50% of the population, then that's absurd.
So what do you think? All right, I get your point, but what do you make of what he did? I mean, it's a picture of...
I thought it was funny. It made me laugh.
Reclaiming my time. It was her resting Fester face. I don't think she looks like Uncle Fester.
Oh, is that a thing as opposed to resting bitch face?
It is now. I'm trademarking it. No, I mean, it was just the coincidence of their expressions was very funny, I thought. I mean, that's why I put it up.
What kind of reaction did you get? And what did your wife say?
My wife doesn't look at my Facebook page. I don't think she had no response.
Come on, Eric. What reaction did you get?
She blocks her. She's very busy these days.
Did anybody else say what at least I'm trying
to
say?
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. On the thread of comments, there were people who were saying, like, don't make fun of her. Don't go there. Don't stoop that low. What's really important is how many lies she tells and so on. And it's ironic, of course, coming to the defense of this administration where they are always mocking people for all their physical attributes.
But how about it, Kristen? I mean, if Scott's drawing a caricature of her and it's exaggerated and she looks a little grotesque or something, should he not be allowed to do that because she's a woman?
I think, cartoonist, that's different. That you take liberties. That's what cartoonists do is push the edges. I just don't like, in general, when people take women, whether it's Kellyanne Conway or, like I mentioned, Janet Reno, and make their appearance something to criticize. I just think it's wrong. And I would say the same thing about, like people constantly talking about Chris Christie and his weight. Get over it.
Yeah, okay.
Deal with their policy positions that you disagree with.
I do think there's a difference there. I agree with you on that, making fun of someone because of his weight or because of her acne or something like that. But I will say that was a caricature.
It's juvenile. It is juvenile.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
Well, here's...
says the cartoonist.
Okay, so speaking of arguments or conversations we don't need to have, I've been keeping a list because I'm mad at the world these days for getting distracted by or spending too much time and energy on things we don't need to be arguing about.
This is from the guy who brings up Donald Trump Jr.'s tweets about his daughter's trick-or-treating. Go ahead.
Okay, so you had how the president calls widows, what his chief of staff calls General Lee.
Hero who went to choose to fight for his state.
And maybe who he blames for the terror attack in New York City.
I'm with you on the first two, and you can add 10 or 12 more. But no, when you have a president of the United States who his first reaction to a terror attack against us is to blame another American.
The senator from the state
in a thread that really doesn't hold up. I mean, I just think that's you have to point out that's an extraordinary thing. No president has ever done that before.
I mean, I have the same. It's wrong. It's Trump being misdirected at every turn and stepping in. You know, just
every time you come to a fork in the road,
he takes the wrong one. Yeah, there's no defending him.
Eric, just jump in there. You've been awfully quiet today.
I have not.
Well,
been quiet.
Well, he was under attack.
I know. Today.
I kind of liked it actually. Yeah. But what do you want to say?
I didn't know we were going to talk about that.
What he said was clearly off base. You know, this whole business, and also jumping in and declaring this guy deserves a death penalty. Yeah, that's informally what a lot of people are saying. He's speaking from the gut, but the guy deserves a trial. We have a rule of law in this country, and that's what it's founded on.
Yeah, the disdain that this president holds the criminal justice system is
it's a joke.
It's a sham. He doesn't believe in it.
Well, he says it, and then Sarah Sanders marches right back out there and denies it. I mean, sometimes within hours of him saying so.
He exhibited this week how little he understands of the government he's running. Frankly, I mean, when he talked about someone asked him, well, would you send this prisoner to Gitmo? Yeah, I'll do that. You know, the fact is that terror defendees or terror cases in criminal courts in the United States are far more effective, far quicker than they are at Gitmo. Sending him to Gitmo would be a terrible idea if he wants to see this guy.
Well, he tweeted this point you're making.
Watched it on the morning talk shows.
That's not when it came up.
And the other thing is this thread that he hangs Schumer on is ridiculous. ISIS didn't exist when Schumer. No, let me just finish. If Schumer and others passed this lottery thing, since then Schumer was part of the Gang of Eight in the Senate who wrote an immigration bill that got rid of it.
Okay,
and it died in the House.
Steve, I'm not cutting you short. I just want to focus.
You
what
are.
You're saying.
I've got more.
Then tell me more because I do not mind us talking about merit versus lottery for immigration status for people. If we do, I think we should remember that based on merit, it's most likely that the 9/11 attackers would have qualified. They would have gotten in. And that the bigger problem isn't letting in terrorists, it's that we're creating them while they're here. I mean, is this the time to have this conversation? And if so,
are we? I don't know exactly what animated this guy. I know he was sort of self-radicalized, right? I'm not sure that we can say that.
They're being created while they are here.
I'm not sure that there were any red flags about this guy when he won that lottery. What was it? How long ago? Was it 9 years ago?
But 2010, I think. Seven years ago.
So, I mean, the thing that interests me about this, or the concern that I have, is how easy it is to kill eight people by just renting a truck and driving down a crowded thoroughfare. I mean, we're very lucky that it was only eight people. That's fairly unusual. I think that you could drive a truck that fast down a bike path like that and not kill more people. We are very vulnerable in this society to all kinds of attacks. Like a lot of soft targets, and I don't know. I'm not sure what we do to protect ourselves from that. I don't know that you can stop people from self-radicalizing.
I'm sorry, John, but I would almost argue the same thing in a different way to where this, I think, is the beginning of where we see it's just normalized. I mean, this was a terror attack, and I don't think most of us, it didn't knock the country on its ass like most other attacks would. I mean, there weren't as many people killed, but it didn't stop, and it didn't scare us. The little kids were walking by that Home Depot truck the next day going to Stuyvesant High School. So I think this is the beginning of sort of the normalization of these things.
It could be. And Zach Farden was the U.S. attorney who departed maybe a year ago from Chicago, Northern District of Illinois. When he left, he wrote a white paper on what needed to be done to reduce crime. And he talked about the need to perhaps infringe on people's First Amendment rights and what they're viewing on the internet in order to stop attacks. And I don't know that we're ready to go there as a country. But that might be the next step is, you know, if you are radicalized here and you are viewing things online, there is a way to red flag you. And we're very protective, of course, of our free speech rights. But, I mean, are we going to just allow ourselves to be normalized, or are we going to be open to the possibility of government creep? I don't know.
Well, shortly after the president got elected, or maybe it was before, he was saying, we need to keep these people from seeing this stuff online. And I think that was a little disturbing to people because it's such a broad brush that he's painting with there. I mean, does that restrict our access to the internet? But if they could, you know, narrow it down to some sites or some individuals and say, either I can't see what you're doing or you can't put your stuff on the internet, can we block from, you know, the
Middle East? That is the worst idea in the world. I'm serious. I can't believe we're even talking about this. Seriously, we're talking about blocking. What happens, John, if all of a sudden the government decides that, you know, John Williams, he's inciting people to do, you know, whatever it is you incite people
vote
to
Democratic.
Do.
Democratic.
Yeah, and all of a sudden you get blocked. No, this is horrific. I can't believe we're having this discussion as journalists. That's insanity.
I'm just quoting the U.S. attorney who
okay, no.
Don't they do that? Do they do that in a form in Europe? Do they not in parts of Europe?
Probably. I mean, I can't answer that authoritatively, but if they do, then it's wrong. I'm sorry. Free speech is free speech. And then if the second you start and you give the government the right to decide what is and is not readable or accessible.
They already do, to a point.
With child pornography.
That's because a crime is committed when that is produced. That's different than saying, I think we should overthrow the government.
Or I want to watch your video and you feel that this strain of the Muslim faith is the right one.
If I may now back up my good friend Scott Standis, I mean, especially when you have a leader right now who wants to take away broadcast licenses from people who broadcast things he doesn't like.
Well, there you go again, Steve. That was just... That was a conversation that got too much attention. That was a one-off. Trump was mad at NBC, said we should pull their license.
Which they don't have.
NBC has a license.
Right.
Oh, but that's his instinct, though. That is totally his instinct. I think it is something to pay a great deal of attention to.
Why does it smell like grilled hamburgers in here all of a sudden?
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
Everybody and... focus.
Okay. Let's move on.
Hey, I want to talk a little bit about the Weinstein effect, too, because it's we talked about this last week, but it's in Springfield and it's everywhere, isn't it? Are you guys intrigued by every day? It seems like there's another allegation against somebody or another guy saying Kevin Spacey, as we record this, is defending himself against another allegation. And the list grows. Now in Springfield, specifically Democratic Senator Ira Silverstein of Chicago is no longer going to serve as the Democratic Majority Caucus Chair after Denise Rothmeier, a crime victims advocate, charged him with numerous unwanted advances. He denies the allegations generally, but says he's sorry if he upset her.
So it is a cultural thing. I think it's probably, I think California is having something similar.
Cultural thing?
That when you have all these lawmakers away from home and in Springfield spending days at a time, sometimes weeks, going out for drinks, I have always found the culture to be a little bit, not necessarily like sexual harassing, but kind of consensual extramarital affair-like. Every year, there are lawmakers who are rumored to be, you know, having affairs, and that to me is more of an issue that I experienced than, you know.
So you're saying promiscuity?
Yes, kind of that. You know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. There's sort of that mentality in Springfield, and you're away from home. You're in close quarters with you know, people for long periods of time.
If it's consensual, I think that's a different conversation.
Well, right. And so that's my point is I'm not sure that there are all these little buckets and everyone's kind of conflating them all together that there's this culture of sexual harassment against women in Springfield. I think some of it is consensual. Some of it is a real problem. I mean, the case with Ira Silverstein, he was holding back on pushing her bill. So that, to me, is a pretty clear-cut case.
Then he finds out she's single, and then all of a sudden the bill comes back to life.
How much of that is actually established in terms of a timeline and how much of it is just
her
allegation?
That's her version of the story.
Did anyone read the excerpts, the extensive excerpts from the Facebook message back and forth?
I read some of them, yes.
It didn't strike me as like predatory or ominous or threatening. It struck me as kind of high school flirtatious banter.
And aggressive on his part. I mean, he was unrelenting. I mean, dude, give it up, right?
I don't. But she was flirting back. I mean, I know we're not supposed to talk about that, and if I even bring it up, then somehow I'm blaming the victim, and I'm not doing that. He was in the wrong. He was in a position of power. But 4,000 Facebook messages back and forth, and she's talking about her weight and her toe ring, and, you know,
That's not her saying go away.
But there probably were times when she was.
I'm concerned she didn't want to say go away. But there is a way. It's like putting up your hand and de-escalating the flirtation. And listen, I've only seen the excerpts, but I haven't seen all the messages, so I don't know what else is there. But I'm assuming that whatever the Capital Facts would have published the most incendiary and salacious excerpts if they had them. It just didn't look to. It looked to me like inappropriate flirting. But I didn't get a sense of menace. I didn't get a sense of like, oh, I can't wait to get you. I just did not feel that in those. I mean, I cringed reading them, but I didn't cringe because I thought, oh, this poor woman. I thought like, these people are just inappropriate. They're both being inappropriate.
Nothing else to do in Springfield.
And because he has more power, it's more inappropriate on his part. I'll give us that. But I'm saying I read that and I was not thunderstruck by it, the way I am, say, about some of these other allegations. Like this is not Weinstein, in other words.
Well, you made that point 2 weeks in a row, and I'm glad you did, because you're right. There's all these little buckets. There's variations of this theme. There was a CNN story, and I have a little file where I'm putting CNN losing its way, because I'm an advocate for CNN and all kinds of journalism, and I think they really work hard at trying to tell us the truth. But damn it, they are making a lot of easy, dumb mistakes these days. And so in their story about Weinstein, they had a list of men who've been accused of, like, Weinstein. So it's Weinstein, and it's this the guy that produced Bugsy or directed Bugsy, Toback, who's got 300 or 200 women accusing him. And then they had George Bush on that, was like number 3 on their list. And it was a woman said, I was sexually assaulted by the senior Bush because he grabbed her a couple of times.
Squeezed her butt, I think. And
like from his wheelchair, right?
I know. So I'm just like, that is a completely separate conversation. I'm not even sure Ben Affleck needs to be in this conversation, too. He squeezed a woman's breast while he was on some TV show, and you can see it from the angle of the camera, and he shouldn't have done it, but I think it's a completely different animal than what we're talking about with Weinstein, or maybe what's going on in some cases in Springfield. You know, we sort of conflate all these things together. Mm-hmm. I think we need to be very careful about that. Although it is a shame, this is the last thing I'll say about it, how rampant it is, how badly, I guess there's the theme, how consistently badly men are behaving in the workplace. You'd agree with me on that, right?
I would agree with you on that.
It's kind of stunning in a way.
Okay.
NPR is just going through this.
I wouldn't say consistently badly, but there is an acceptance of sort of just inappropriate conversation, I think, from some men. And I mean, I don't need to go through my Me Too stories, but it just I guess I'm not surprised at the women who are coming forward. I'm not surprised at all.
And see, what I don't like, John, in this, and I've been saying this, that we're going to go too far. We're going to overcorrect, and then we're going to self-correct. I'd object to you using the when you say the way men are behaving in the workplace. It's not men. It's some men. It's the offending men. But when we start
a lot
to
of men, I guess I'm naive or live in a very sheltered world.
What do you mean?
I didn't think it was this rampant.
My worry, though, is what I'm trying to say is that it's not every man who does this. And when we start to use language that implies that we're saying men behave this way, not offending men behave this way, I just think we do ourselves damage, and that's when I get a little defensive.
It's time for our recommendations, kids. What are you suggesting that people watch, read, listen to, or consume in some way?
We're all like scrambling.
I know. I love that about you. I mean, at least.
This teacher's calling on me.
Bertrand.
I'm going to re-recommend. I recommended last year maybe this series on Amazon called Red Oaks, and it's Paul Reiser, Richard Kind, Gina Gershon is in it, I think. And it's kind of a takeoff on the 80s. Country club shows like Caddyshack and all of that. It's a sitcom set in the 80s in a New Jersey country club. And season 3 just was out a couple of weeks ago. It's the last season. They've wrapped it up. And it's just kind of an entertaining show. I like the music, the 80s music they pick. It's not the top 40 music you would have heard. It's kind of a little more insightful. The the guy who plays the central kid wants to be a director, of course, and he does such a good job of acting with his face and doing that. I looked him up, and he's actually from Wales. I would have never believed that, but the show is called, he's just so good. He just fits in so well. But it's called Red Oaks, and I still think you should catch up on that one.
Huh. How about you, Kristen?
Okay, so I'm recommending that you read this article by Ken Stern. He's a former CEO of NPR. The title is, A Liberal Spends a Year with Devout Trump Voters and Discovers He's Been Wrong. And it just talks about how he needed to get away from his liberal Democratic friends, away from his little bubble. He was still confused about the election. How did this happen? And he spent time with Trump supporters. And instead of discovering, you know, gun-toting racists like they are all labeled, he just talks about how he found people, you know, pastors, farmers, people who spent a lot of time trying to help the poor. It's a really good piece, and Ken Stern, it was published, I think, on McClatchy's website recently.
I'd like to share with him all the email that I get from Trump supporters.
That is a really interesting suggestion.
I'm interested to read that.
Give us the author and the piece again.
Ken Stern, former CEO of NPR. It's on McClatchy, on the McClatchy website. And it's a liberal spends a year with Trump supporters.
Yeah. Is this a book or he's just been a year?
It's just an article.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about you, Eric?
McClatchy,
you like?
They got a budget there. They got to spend a whole year on one article. I'm recommending a Netflix series called Atypical. Anyone heard of it? Mm-hmm. It's 8 episodes. And it's about, I just started watching it. It's about a kid, 18-year-old kid who's on the autism spectrum. And the family dynamic that goes into that, and it's very well acted, and it's really interesting. Jennifer Jason Leigh is the named star of the show, and again, it's 8 episodes, easy to watch, and so I recommend it.
How about you, Scott?
Political just posted an excerpt from Donna Brazile's new book, Hacked. The excerpt they post is fascinating as she comes in and takes over the Democratic National Committee. And how Wasserman Schultz and others kind of just handed the whole thing over to the Hillary campaign, and how they really did screw Bernie Sanders over. It's a remarkable and frankly very very honest. And I would give it a read just to give you an idea of how money works and how the Clinton campaign likes it and how they pretty much use the DNC for money laundering. Nothing illegal, just kind of like wow. And the Bernie Bros have a point.
Are you a fan of the Dilbert cartoonist?
I used to be.
Scott Adams, right?
Yes.
His book is Thinking Bigly, and it's just out. I'm interviewing him tomorrow.
Oh.
And he is a Trump supporter. Who knew? I mean, I guess actually a lot of people knew because he was out about that over the course of the campaign and took hell for it, too.
Was he a Trump supporter during the campaign? I know he is now, but I got the feeling that he was like, he came out and predicted a Trump victory. And then he got.
I thought he endorsed him.
He got landed on, and then he. I felt like he turned. He turned.
You both are right. Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, my shorthand on that is inaccurate, actually, Eric. He says so at the beginning of the book. He says, I wasn't saying I was for him. I was saying this guy's a brilliant communicator, but he doesn't. He's not mortified enough by Trump for me, and so I think you can say all you want. Oh, I'm not a Trump supporter. I'm not in his camp. Yes, you are. But the book, anyway, is fascinating because he talks at great length about how Trump is so much better at this communication game. Communicating is what the book's about than, say, Hillary was or a lot of us are. And as an example, he gives the wall. He said, you could say I'm for tighter border security or I'm not worried about border security. But if you say, I want to build a wall, it's visual, it's simple, and everybody in their mind will create the wall that they think should be built. So everybody, he never gave the specs. He gave some descriptions.
It'd be a big, beautiful wall.
And that's the quote he keeps using, Eric. He says, everybody's now imagining what their version of the big, beautiful wall is. And for some people, in fact, for Adams, he said, I saw it as sort of a gateway between the two countries where pop-up markets would, come up and people, it would be a welcoming gathering place, but it would be a secure wall. Other people see it as this, punishing thing. And Trump was smart to simply say that, even if he didn't mean a wall.
Certainly one of the things that Trump mastered as well as any politician ever has is just overpromising. It's like Hillary Clinton was not, she was like sort of steady as she goes. The Obama years, right, are going to build on these successes. And Trump was saying, we're going to drain the swamp. We're going to give you great health care at half
a
fraction of
the
price.
Day, like that.
And we're going to, all these things he's going to do. And the lesson that history just keeps telling us is that if you tell people what they want to hear, they'll vote for you, and they're not going to ask too many hard questions. Because I tried to do that with Trump. A lot of journalists tried to be like, what are you talking about? What, we don't need a wall. We don't. It's cost billions and billions of dollars, and immigration is actually slowing from Mexico. We don't need that. You can't. And healthcare, you have these competing mandates for healthcare. You want to lower the cost but expand coverage. You can't do that. But nobody asks those questions.
Didn't like,
well,
you ever?
He says he can do that. And so he's good at lying about stuff. Basically, he's really good at that. I'll give him that. Wait. How does Dogbert work in that firm? He does not have opposable thumbs. Ask him that.
That's this week's podcast. Thank you, Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis, Steve Bertrand, Kristen McQuarrie, Ben Cortez engineers the Mincing Rascals, and we always appreciate that. Our regular producer is Elif Garris. Tom Hush. Is it Tom or is it Tim? Tom Hush is our producer today. And Tom, we appreciate your help on that. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on the John Williams Show on WGN Radio.